Sound Advice continues here on Business Radio 1300 KKOL.
I'm Susan Michaels.
And I'm Rick O'Brien, and this is Sound Advice.
And we're talking with Reba Haas. She's with Team Reba Real Estate. Now, Reba, why was it that you moved from the tech industry back in 2003 into real estate? Why at that point?
Well, it wasn't initially an intentional move. I had been in tech for 13 years. Mm-hmm. The last company that I was at, I had been recruited heavily by a company in the Houston area to come join them because they wanted me to develop a relationship with Microsoft because I had worked with them in the past at another firm. And when I went there, it was with the idea that I would, you know, do the same thing I was doing before. But shortly after I started, there was intense pressure by some of our partners to back off the idea of working with Microsoft. And so I was kind of in a wait and see mode. And I had done a lot of history check on this company before I went to work for them. Mm-hmm. They had been trying to recruit me for months, and I finally went over. The one thing I couldn't check about them was the new CEO. And shortly after starting with the firm, I found out it was going to be the CEO that was the number one issue at the company. And within about a nine-month period of time of being there, he did what I call a legal fleecing of the firm. Took about $14.5 million in forgivable loans in his CEO package. This was also at the same time of Enron and WorldCom.
Okay.
And so I watched this CEO that I was the only person I couldn't do any history check on because he had worked for a private firm, take all this money. And I did a lot of background check on it, and I started checking the K-1s of the company. It was a public company, and I sat in on an analyst call, and I heard what he said, and it was just like mouth agape kind of thing.
Now, was this something that was your responsibility to do, or is something you were doing on your own?
I do a lot of background searching.
With your tech background, you would think that this is something that you may have been assigned this task of doing background checks.
Well, that's, you know, so my husband likes to say that I do sales by stalking. And, you know, having worked in the tech field and having, mm-hmm. Part of how I eventually sold something to Microsoft was because I did a lot of research about them as a company and their needs
now
and their marketing and what have you.
What more exactly were you doing in tech?
I sold the most boring technology product on the planet. It was database connectivity. So it was shortly after Microsoft had just gone through the Sun Microsystems uh-huh. lawsuit, and Java was a definite four-letter word on campus, and we were not a preferred vendor or anything of that sort, even though we'd had a relationship with Microsoft. And the firm I worked at had this new technology. It was a database connector called a JDBC driver, and it was brand new at the time. And so we had been a 25-year known company for this kind of technology, working with large scale vendors all over the place. So every large firm that has all kinds of systems and reporting tools, basically our boring little product was what ran out and fetched the data to come back to the reporting
tools. An essential part of making it all work.
Very essential. And so Microsoft at the time was trying to push into financial services, mm-hmm. which is mostly dominated by mainframe type companies like IBM and BEA Systems at the time. And so, you know, here I was, I got recruited by a firm that database connectivity for mainframe. And so I had started opening conversations, and of course our main partners freaked out about it because they didn't want to see Microsoft get into that role. And, you know, the last company I'd worked at, we had successfully sold them something that I knew their clients needed because I literally traveled the United States and as far as Barcelona wow. to track the guys I needed to talk to and would be at conferences talking to the users of their products, finding out what they needed. And when I had originally suggested to my boss that we sell this JDBC driver to them, he was like, would you like someone's foot in your backside as they send you out the door? But it was something we successfully licensed to them. It was a one-time snapshot of code. It was great, but that's why this other firm recruited me. So here I was now, Microsoft, because it couldn't touch the mainframe, suddenly I had appointments. I mean, I had to chase people literally for 2.5 years across the planet to get that before, and within 2 months, I had people inviting me on campus. Mm. So I knew we had something, and those other partners began putting pressure on us. So I was asked to back off. And so that gave me time to just kind of go, well, what am I going to do next here? And so because I'm also an investor myself, you know, I was making very good money and had my own retirement plans and whatnot. So I sat in on the calls because I think it's important to know what your company's doing. And if your CEO is talking to analysts that impact what happens to your stock price and mm-hmm. whatnot, if you have an ownership stake in your firm, you should pay attention.
Know sure. what's going on. Yeah.
So I'm sitting on the analyst call and I hear all the questions they're asking. And my CEO says, well, if I'd known you were going to ask all this, I should have brought on the CFO because I'm just an engineer. And I thought, oh, crap, we're dead. And that was in January of 2003. By March 6th, the board had figured out a lot more about this guy and about the $14.5 million in loans. And he bought an 11,000-square-foot house with part of that. And then he shored up the company he and his twin brother had owned that had been failing with the rest of it. So I watched one third of the firm I now worked for be laid off because we were a 24/7 around the sun coverage for the technology. And so I watched all day as my colleagues were being laid off and then knew, you know, when I got my phone call from my boss that I was next. Mm-hmm. And I took that moment to say, okay, I've worked for all these other people. What's my skill set? Well, I didn't build technology. I didn't build planes. I didn't do, you know, I wasn't a developer, but I had worked for many years with large scale contracts with lots of attorneys. Cause I can tell you the one that I, you know, the licensing deal I did with Microsoft required a lot of attorneys and a $3 million insurance policy on that product. So there were a lot of things involved in it. And, I thought, well, I have a lot of contract experience. I have sales, marketing. I know how to do all of that. And I had a huge database of people from all over the planet that I'd met. And I thought, well, I'm really good at these things. And decided, I actually started three companies at one time, landscape, design, sales consulting, and real estate, knowing probably real estate would be the thing that would shake out.
But you had a couple fallbacks.
Well, they were just things I was interested in. Yeah, I love gardening and design and all that. And I've done all my own properties over time. So
and it kind of goes with the other too.
It does.
They all kind of fit together.
Well, it does, and it actually ended up being very useful. And in fact, my early career was actually in retail management. I used to run a children's furniture store, so all the vignettes, think staging.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. So I stage all of my clients' properties, whether they're living in it, whether it's with their products, joining of my materials plus theirs, mm-hmm. or I can do it from scratch. I have properties right now that are vacant homes that we've got fully staged. So we do all of those types of things as well. So all of these skill sets that I brought in from personal interests and career just came very nicely together within the world of real estate.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you entered at a time where we had this bubble kind of disappearing.
What I always kind of teach my clients when we talk about the history of mm-hmm. real estate in Puget Sound is, you know, in the early 2000s, we were lucky in that Microsoft kind of leading the way. We went from being just a Boeing economy to this more diverse economy.
Right.
So that does help with your housing because you have more types of businesses that keep an area afloat, because one of the main things that impacts the cost of housing is also employment. So you have, you know, interest rates are one, but then also employment. The thing that was the irrational exuberance of the early 2000s, though, was that we were still dealing with some relatively high unemployment while housing was growing at an incredible appreciation rate. And what most people around here don't realize is that even though we were growing 12 to 35% annually in appreciation during that period of time, we'd never broke the top 20 of the U.S. In terms of growth. And so people think that, oh, yeah, you're so high priced. Well, we were relative, depending on where you were. So, of course, those market areas that grew the fastest fell the hardest when things really tipped over. But, you know, I got into real estate knowing that I needed to you know, kind of really rely on my old contacts in a lot of areas. So, you know, and that actually was a good thing for me because the tech sector was an area of growth. You know, even though there was the Y2K stuff in 2003, we still had some other businesses coming in. There was some growth. Amazon was still not quite, I mean, it's nothing like what it is today.
Right.
Yeah. Today it is one of the absolute drivers of the North Seattle economy. And unfortunately, it hasn't hit all areas of Seattle, but the North End, in particular, Central and North End, is highly impacted by their growth and development.
Have we learned a lot of lessons from the things that we've gone through? Do you see some of the same mistakes coming up again, or are we pretty much past some of those things as far as bubbles and things that may happen again?
Well, some of the things that have helped mitigate mm-hmm. those issues is what I referred to earlier about licensing
right.
requirements.
Okay.
The fact that mortgage professionals are no longer just hired for their sales
skills. People have
skills.
To know stuff now.
They have to know things, and they definitely are held to a different standard
okay.
than they were before.
More accountability.
Absolutely, more mm-hmm. accountability.
So a lot of good really has come out of
good.
Some of this.
There's a lot of changes afoot, too. October is when we have a bunch of the Truth in Lending and additional Dodd-Frank Act elements coming into how closings happen. So that's generally good. Because it's meant to inform the consumer.
Sure.
But I will tell you what we haven't learned is math. We still haven't learned math because we still have a lot of folks who just don't understand how interest rates truly impact their purchasing power. And you'll still sometimes run into folks who are like, well, I just want to get $10,000 off the price. You're like, yeah, but if you just got the closing costs and bought a point down, you'd really save a lot more money over the long run.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's a whole lot of different strategies.
Right.
And it's really, you should see the eyes roll back in the head for some folks when you start discussing interest rates and closing cost points.
Yeah.
Just no idea.
Yeah, they get intimidated. They quickly get intimidated. And it's just because it's nomenclature they're just not familiar with.
Yeah. Well, I want to find out some more about the actual process mm-hmm. of selling. We're going to take a break before too long.
We'll just get started into it.
Phrase it, and then mm-hmm. we'll take the break and
sure.
come back. I know that a lot of people I have heard are receiving multiple offers on their homes.
Correct.
Okay. Is that something that everyone can expect? If not, I want you to kind of explain why. If so, you can explain that. We'll go into some more of that.
But we're going to take a short break right now. So that's the tease. And when we get back, we'll discuss on that. Can people expect multiple offers?
Wow. That's right.
Mm. On our edges of our seats.
We're talking with Reba Haas. She's with Team Reba Real Estate on Sound Advice.
Sound Advice returns in a moment on Business Radio 1300 KKOL.